Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Our recently promoted person, Gary LeMaster, is sitting across from me.
The guy with the title now.
Yeah,
I don't remember
title of senior executive producer, first class.
And we have a guest today, the executive director of the Arizona ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, of which I'm a member, by the way.
All right, is
Alessandra Soler, and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
And Alessandra was a reporter for the Miami Herald, before joining the ACLU in 1999 in New Orleans, and you moved here in 2006.
Yes, I did. I did. I went from the world of reporting to the world of advocacy.
Yes. And you said that when you moved from New Orleans, you thought you were moving to someplace more progressive than Louisiana.
Yeah, yes, exactly. I did. Well, I started out with ACLU in 99 in New Orleans, then moved to Florida, where I was there during the Bush v. Gore debacle, I guess we would say, and the Terri Schiavo controversy, and then came here. And that was, I really did think that I was moving to a friendlier place with regard to civil liberties. But
let's ask about the Terri Schiavo stuff, because Jeb Bush is probably the leading candidate.
Yeah.
He certainly has the most money for the Republican nomination for president. So what happened with that controversy? Was the ACLU involved down in Florida?
We were.
Time?
We got involved. Initially it was sort of a family law matter, and it was in sort of family court. And we got involved when the governor and the legislature, and then the governor signed the law allowing the state of Florida to intervene in this family dispute and prevent her from withdrawing her life support, prevent her husband from withdrawing her life support.
She'd been in a coma for how long?
You know, at this point, gosh, I don't remember the details, but she had been in a coma for many, many years.
Yeah.
And, he was at the time, I think he was her ex-husband. They had gotten divorced, and she did not have, I think the issue raised really important questions about the importance of having a living will. And, what I think that case really did show was you had a state government sort of interjecting and getting involved in these very personal, private medical decisions that were being made by the family, and then using religion as the justification for their intrusion. And so I think now, there's this conversation about how Jeb Bush is a very moderate candidate. That was a perfect example that showed.
But he radically intervened in a case.
He did.
This is a case that became, it's one of those things, folks, if you don't remember, it's one of those things that starts out as a small matter and gets
yes.
blown into a national controversy that goes on and on and on. And as Governor Jeb Bush really tried to interfere with the family's decision about whether to keep her on a life support pretty much indefinitely. And he did a lot of dramatic things to try to do it. I think there was a discussion in Congress.
Right.
This was
unprecedented. It was unprecedented in terms of the intrusion into medical decisions. I mean, they were, you had politicians both in Congress and in the state legislature in Tallahassee sort of purportedly reviewing her medical records and making, having discussions about her care on the floor. I do think it was an example of how out of line they were in promoting their own religious agenda. I mean, I think in that instance,
they were using her, and did they seize her body, or did they seize her or try to seize control of her care?
No, if I remember correctly, it didn't get to that point. There was a law that was passed, and then we ultimately ended up challenging it. So it mm-hmm. was in the courts, and then they had it preliminarily blocked the law from being enforced, and the law would have prevented the family from withdrawing her life support. And then we were litigating for many, many years. And so, You know, I read a story, I can't remember where, a story recently where they interviewed Michael Schiavo, and, you know, he said very sort of pointedly, you know, Jeb never called me to apologize. And it just showed how, he was using his power and his, authority as the governor to intervene in this very difficult, difficult family matter.
Right. One of the most difficult family matters possible
right.
that had been going on a long time. And he intervenes both for political reasons and because he disagrees with the family
decision.
He disagrees with the family decision.
For religious reasons, right.
And it becomes this national controversy. And you're basically, as the ACLU, were on the side of letting the family decide
what
happened with her.
Yeah, and so I use that as an example because I came, you know, then I came to Arizona, and then sure enough, we became the center of controversy on all kinds of issues, ranging from immigration to abortion to, you know, marriage and gay adoption issues. I mean, all kinds of stuff.
So you had a quiet year this year at the ACLU in Arizona, not much to do.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, vacation time.
I have great job security. I guess that's my, I like to say that is that, this is actually a pretty wonderful year for civil liberties this last year, 2014, because we had some major victories in almost all of our cases. We're known as a legal organization. That's what we are known for, but we are increasingly becoming more involved in legislative advocacy and lobbying. But last year was really a big win in a lot of our cases. We won against the governor in the lawsuit prohibiting Dreamers from having driver's licenses. We won against Arpaio. We've sued the governor. We've sued Arpaio. We've sued Chuck Ryan from the Arizona Department of Corrections. And we've won in all these big cases. And I think ultimately it's really a testament to, you know, look, the ACLU may not always be, we may be criticized. I think a lot of times we're seen as being out of the mainstream and sort of out of line. But I think ultimately, I believe we're not. And I think ultimately we're always on the right side of history, and we're a very principled organization. We are not afraid to take positions that maybe seem as controversial, you know, standing up for the rights of immigrants at a time when they're being vilified and attacked. Was an unpopular position. And here we are 5 years after 1070, where most legislators don't have an appetite anymore for attacking, you know, the brown people in our state.
I think people misunderstand the ACLU. It's they tend to not understand the full name, the Civil Liberties part
right.
of the group. And I think it gets positioned as a liberal group. But often the ACLU takes positions, because it's focused on civil liberties,
right.
takes positions that infuriate Democrats and please Republicans. So it's not really a political group per se, is it?
No, that's a really good point, Gary. We first of all, we do not endorse candidates for office. I think that's a really important point. And we are bipartisan. I mean, we just, for example, launched a new right-left criminal justice coalition with the Koch brothers. And, we're an organization that is, we recognize increasingly in order to advance policies that protect everyone's civil liberties, you have to find bipartisan support. And so certainly in the context of sentencing reform, we work very closely with people across the political spectrum. The Patriot Act, I mean, the Patriot Act, which is up for renewal this year, there are, a lot of the work that we did shortly after 9/11 was involved bipartisan effort. So I think you're right. I think we get tagged a lot as a liberal organization, but, we're not. I mean, we defend the Constitution, and we have the luxury of saying, look, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, those are our clients, so we don't pick and choose. We don't get to pick and choose who our clients are. Our client is the Bill of Rights, and it means that sometimes we take positions that may not be popular positions, but I think ultimately they're the right positions.
And Dreamers are folks who were brought here when they were children, right, by their parents,
right.
who had no choice usually in coming to the United States. And what happened is that the Obama administration passed a ruling so that they wouldn't be deported. If you were brought here as a child and you lived in the United States, and then there were certain rules that you had to obey.
Right.
Yeah. And then the governor decided that you couldn't have a driver's license. And
right.
So you sued so that you can imagine living in Arizona without a driver's license, folks. You take people's driver's license away, it sets off all kinds of things. It destroys their employment possibilities mm-hmm. and everything else. What did you have a question, Gary?
Well, I was just going to comment on, you know, with regard to politics, is that I don't understand why you wouldn't be the favorite organization of libertarians everywhere.
Oh, right.
You know, it really, you know, although they tend to seemingly dislike the organization, I don't think an organization in the country, you know, does more to defend civil liberties and defend the Constitution than the ACLU, which is why I'm a member of it.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to hear that you are a member. And I think, you know, we do, in fact, this last year we had the running joke about the ACLU is, you know, we defend, this is how the ACLU counts, right? They say 1, 3, 4 is like the running joke is that the ACLU ignores sort of the Second Amendment. And I think, for us, the gun rights and defending the constitutional rights that people have to the Second Amendment is not a priority issue, because there are so many other groups here in Arizona that are prioritizing that. But I mentioned it because we were involved in an important free speech case this past year involving, for example, the rights to advertise of a business owner to advertise his gun training business. And so, you know, I think that's an area where, and we've done a lot of work with the NRA on issues related to national security and privacy and databases and things like that. And with libertarians, we may not agree on all issues. I mean, we here in Arizona, our affiliate has a strong, we support public education. That is one of the fundamental, Arizona has a very strong constitutional guarantee to, you know, free public education, or as free as possible. And so that may be an area where, in some instances we can find common ground or we may not. But I think that there are a lot of areas where we do find common ground. We are the libertarians played a very important, role in supporting our marriage equality campaign. You know, I think a lot of the libertarian, party groups across the state, they believe the government shouldn't be involved in dictating who you should marry, and so that we built some strong alliances with the libertarians there.
Let's get into some of the hot button issues.
Sure. Yeah.
the one that's made the most press lately is the Indiana law that
yes.
was almost an Arizona law a year or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
I call it the Restoration of Religious Freedom Act. But I call it the Freedom to Discriminate Act.
Right.
What's going on with that? Is that on the radar of the
yes,
ACLU?
Yes, very much. Yes. You know, what we're seeing is, you know, thank goodness that didn't happen here in Arizona. I mean, what happened last year with 1062, when the governor signed 1062, was really a wake up call, I think for the state, where the governor didn't sign it, the state legislature passed it, and she ultimately vetoed it. And what it would have done is drastically, it would have given corporations and businesses the right to discriminate, exactly as you say, Gary. And here we have a situation with Indiana where they had buyer's remorse, right? They passed this law and then realized there was opposition from across the board, including businesses who have threatened to move out of Indiana and not move to Indiana, and then now they're trying to backtrack. And I'm happy to say that you know, I'm glad that we're not in that position. But this isn't the end of the story. We are seeing states across the country now following, for example, the Hobby Lobby decision and following these good marriage decisions, is that what they're trying to do now is allegedly trying to balance equality and non-discrimination with religious freedom, where they are trying to create exemptions in civil rights laws for religion. And look, we used religion to justify discrimination against African Americans. And so we are now, in many instances, these groups are trying to argue that they can use religion to discriminate against gay people. Our position is that this is, if you're in public accommodations laws should be fully inclusive, and that we do not have the right to use our religion to discriminate. The marriage equality work that we've been doing, we're when we give people the right to marry, for example, we're not forcing churches to recognize same-sex marriages. There are already existing very strong protections in Arizona law that protect the religious freedom of churches, for example. But what we're saying now is that, businesses who serve the public, can't turn the public away because of who they are or who they choose to love.
So once you open your door, I'm open to the public. I'm baking cakes, and one of my specialties is wedding cakes. You can't decide because it's a gay couple that you can't make their cake. It's hard to see that you're doing anything except your job. I mean, it's not like you're, if I make a cake that says happy wedding and it's a gay couple, I mean, I haven't endorsed marriage equality. All I've done is made a cake as my clients asked me to make. I haven't, it's not like I'm participating. I don't see I'm participating religiously. The other thing that disturbs me, Alexandra, is that corporations seem to be able to, at least under the Arkansas law, to have their own religious beliefs. I mean, a corporation, first we decide they're people, and now we decide that they have their own religion. So I just baffled by this.
Which is so absurd, having been a corporate owner. A corporation is a piece of paper. It's actually a series of documents. It's nothing more than that.
Right.
And I like to see them pay taxes at the rate that individuals do.
As some have said, I'll believe corporations are people when you see the first one executed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But it's the idea that a corporation has a religious belief. Our corporation has a religious belief against hiring gay people.
Well,
right.
Is
that okay?
It's not okay. And I think that, but I think the good news on the positive side, it's not okay, but on the positive side is that a lot of the big corporations, in fact, the majority of the big corporations recognize that that's not a good business practice. And so what we saw here in Arizona when the Chamber of Commerce, both the state and the large municipal chambers across across the state opposed 1062 because they realize it is not good for business for us to be turning away groups of people because of their sexual orientation. Now, I do want to say that Arizona, we have already existing strong laws that protect people's religious freedom. So, in Arizona, for example, we have a law that says that an individual has the right to express him or herself, and the government can't do anything to violate his or her individual rights. That doesn't apply to corporations, right? That law applies to a government entity, which traditionally there are strong federal laws and state laws that say that the government can infringe on your religious freedom. But what we're seeing, and this is the trend, is to try to expand that, what we call a Religious Freedom Restoration Act, to add corporations. So it's not just the government, but when a corporation does something, expanding those religious freedom rights for those corporations, which we obviously opposed, and we're very devoting a lot of resources to fight back against that. You can, I was going to mention that Arizona already has these strong protections. In Arizona, there are laws, for example, saying that corporations have the right to deny birth control coverage. Religiously affiliated corporations have a right to deny birth control coverage to women. We obviously think that that's wrong. I think it discriminates against women. There are other laws that allow professionals with licenses, licensed professionals, to cite their religion as a basis to turn certain clients away. We also
think would be an example of that?
An example is a school counselor, a licensed, a school counselor or a private counselor, not a school counselor because they would fall under existing, municipal protections, but a private therapist who is seeing a gay couple who's been having, marital problems, for example, and say, I don't feel comfortable serving you. And that private
counsel. And they have a legal right to do that.
Under Arizona law, they do. Religiously affiliated corporation in Arizona. And that's, to your point, Gary, what does that mean, a religiously affiliated? It means that they have to add the term religiously affiliated to their governing documents, to their bylaws. That's it. And so there's a long list of corporations who are in the construction industry, who are in all kinds of different industries, who are now can claim that they're religiously affiliated, and then they can discriminate.
And they can do that
by just
putting a line in their documents.
Yeah, they have to. Your corporate documents, your corporate governing documents would have to be say that you're religiously affiliated.
Now, suppose they discriminate against somebody, Alexandra, and the person sues them. Not you guys, but they sue them. They're discriminating against me. I'm gay. I want a job there, or I get a job there, and they fire me because I'm gay. And they say, well, we have a religious right to fire you. How does that work out in terms of the law
right now, or
how should it work out?
Right now, there is no protection. If you're gay and you are fired because of your sexual orientation, there is no protection unless you're in one of the four municipalities in the state that offer those protections. And so that's Flagstaff, Tempe, Phoenix, and
Tucson.
Fourth one? And Tucson, right. So there are four municipalities that have protections on the basis of sexual orientation for employment and for housing and for public accommodations.
And that's not just the city's practices. That's all the people doing business in the town.
Right. That includes exactly. So, but here in Sedona, for example,
they're considering it. The council will be considering resolutions very similar to the ones in Flagstaff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if you're in Glendale and any of the other big towns, Scottsdale, they're also looking at this. But in Scottsdale, if you are fired, within any business in the city of Scottsdale for on the basis of your sexual orientation, you have no legal recourse. And so I think that's why it's problematic, because there is no statewide law. What we need is a statewide law that protects everyone regardless of what city they're in, because it's confusing, right? You don't know, wow, I'm in Sedona now and I get a job in Sedona and I don't have the same protections that I do in Phoenix or in Flagstaff. And so it is important that we have a statewide law that is fully inclusive and that protects everyone against discrimination.
So if you have a sexual preference that they don't like, they can just fire you and you can't do anything about it.
Yeah, no. If you're living in any of those cities that are not covered.
In those, the four cities?
No, you can't. And that's why, you know, you can get married in the morning to your partner, and if you're gay, you can get married in the morning and be fired in the evening for your sexual orientation, because we don't have those protections.
Where is that line drawn in the state law? Is it only pertain to gays? Does it pertain to people that are not married living together? Does it pertain to blacks, women?
Yeah, that's a good question, Gary. The state civil rights, we have state non-discrimination protections on the basis of, you know, all of these examples that you gave. So on the basis of your gender, on the basis of your race and ethnicity, on the basis of your national origin, those are all traditionally protected categories. So you cannot be fired if you are, you know, become pregnant, or if you are, based off of the fact that you're, you know, Latina or Latino. So those are all protected categories. The only piece that's not protected under the statewide law is sexual orientation.
And again, there's a fine line. How do you determine that? You know, if the person doesn't bring their sexuality into the workplace,
mm-hmm.
you know, are you, you know, the employers peeking in windows to see what where is it drawn?
It could be as simple as bringing my, you know, bring my picture of my partner and I set it up on my desk and it is. A lot of people are terrified to come out of the closet because of that very same reason. They don't have protections, and there's a tremendous amount of fear. But it could be as simple as putting a picture of my partner on my desk, and then my colleague finds out and tells his or her boss, wow, so-and-so is gay. And then that could open up all kinds of you know, harassment and serious sort of...
Years ago, when I worked in New York, one of the guys, he was sort of unstable, complained that went to management telling them that one of the employees was gay, and they wanted to get rid of him, and that he was engaged in a relationship with somebody who was managing the salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he went to them. I tried to discourage him. It was a really stupid thing to do. But he went to management, and they went, the guy's a good salesman. We don't care what his, I mean, this is like 30 years ago. We don't care what his sexual preference is.
Right.
It's none of our business. We don't care. Take your complaint. You have no complaint against the guy except you don't like his sexual orientation. And they just said, well, you know, if you don't like it here, you know, you can go too, you know, but we're not firing somebody who's doing a good job
right. Just
because of sexual orientation. And there was no law back in those days. It was just common sense, you know. It's just business that if you have a bunch of salesmen in a corporation, you have every different personality
right. You've
ever seen, every different religion and race. The guys who are good at it are just good at it.
Right,
and you want to keep them.
And that's a good point, Stephen, because even though we don't have statewide non-discrimination protections on the basis of sexual orientation, a lot of our big corporations that are based here do. So it may dip, you know, there you could be working for, and I think, you know, Intel may be one of them. I mean, most of the big corporations recognize, as you said, that it's a good business practice. So they may have, business-wide or corporate-wide policies that protect against sexual orientation discrimination. And then if you get fired, you can, you know, rely on that for some level of protection, you know, which is, but again, there's no statewide protection. And then one of the responses that we're getting from legislators is, well, they're saying, well, you know, this may be too much of a mandate on government, and so too much of a mandate of on corporations, which is why it's so important for us, and we have been really building close alliances with businesses who can say, this is good for us, it's good for business, it actually helps us become more profitable, attract good talent. You know, we want people to move to Arizona to come work for our companies, and if we have can say that we have policies to protect them and their families, then we become more appealing in terms of economic development.
I guess one thing that I guess amazes Gary and I is that the Arizona legislature passes all this crazy stuff unless the Arizona business community comes and says, hey, we don't want any trouble, we don't want any more crazy stuff, get rid of that. But
But
as being sort of liberal, progressive, or democratic, we don't have much influence. The business community comes in and says, suddenly things begin to fade.
Well, the irony too, though, Stephen, it's funny, is that the state just passed a law preventing municipalities from banning plastic bags. And so that's a mandate from the state, right? That is going to...
Well,
and all kinds of mandates come down from the state.
It's a conservative contrast to the state's position with the federal government. We don't want the federal government telling us what to do.
Right.
And then they want to tell the municipality.
We'll tell cities and counties what to do.
And they want to tell cities and counties what to do about plastic bags.
Yeah.
And there's a whole series of rules and have been for years that controls what municipalities can do
right. In
Arizona. Coming from a legislature who is always bashing the federal government because there's too much national forest in the state or something, and they turn around and then they pass all this legislation that takes away local control.
Yeah, and they've been ahead. Look, the municipalities. The reality is they've been ahead of the curve on a lot of issues. So they're ahead of the curve on non-discrimination. They've been ahead of the curve on a lot of police accountability issues. They're ahead of the curve on
minimum wage,
environmental issues. So we see progress in the state of Arizona at the municipal level. And what we don't want, and we know there have been studies there that show that the Arizona legislature doesn't necessarily represent Arizonans, and they represent a very small percentage of kind of very extremist
especially
member of the voting bloc.
Especially our LD6 representatives.
Yeah, it's amazing that when they poll Arizonans are actually pretty moderate
or
moderately conservative. Let's say they're moderately conservative to be accurate. And then we get all these extremists and crazies getting elected because they can't get – it's hard to get – what I guess as Democrats we'd like to see is some decent Republicans running for office. I mean, hey, we will vote for you if you're not a crazy. Once you get out, but we can't do much if you're in a primary, right?
Right.
And we're registered Democrats, but if you're registered independent, you could do something. But you know, we'll settle for a moderate conservative replacement for some of these people who are now our legislative tinfoil hat representatives.
What do you guys think about? Can I ask a question? As my former,
sure.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you all feel about Ducey in his first term and
anti-education?
Yeah. You know,
clearly anti-education.
The biggest problem I see with Ducey is his connections with the private education businesses
and Kathy Herod.
Yeah, and with the private prisons. Now that's kind of in the background now in the prison, but we can talk about that in a minute. But
yeah.
I guess my big feeling about Ducey is that he lacks the commitment to public education that creates a democracy. Without strong public education for our kids, you really cannot have a functioning democracy.
Right.
And you can look around the world. It's not like a big secret. The countries that have a strong educational public system are the countries that have a strong democracy. The ones that don't have it have a private system or have a public system that you bribe your way into for corruption. Those countries are always weak, disorganized,
right.
And tend to tyranny.
You mentioned prison, Steve. Let's talk about conditions in the prisons in Arizona. Am I right that we have some of the worst conditions in prisons in the United States in the modern world?
We have. Here's how we stand out among the rest. We have the highest prison incarceration rate in the West, are among the top. Top 10 in the entire country, and some of the most brutal and inhumane prisons in the country as well. There's been a dramatic increase in the number of people behind bars, even though there's been a decrease in the crime rates. And Arizona has, as a policy, made a policy decision to incarcerate as many people as possible and enforce what we call the truth in sentencing laws that became popular in the early 90s, where mandatory, everyone has to serve at least 85% of their sentences, even people who are nonviolent and who haven't, who would be eligible for early release. And so it is created because of our truth in sentencing laws, it means that people are being held for longer periods of times in their prison, and it costs a lot of money. So what we've seen is that there's been, we've been putting more and more people behind bars and not adequately funding their medical and mental health services. And
there's no reform.
So we've seen a drastic decrease in the budget for the delivery of medical and mental health care. And what happens? It's causing deaths at alarming rates. And when we sued the Department of Corrections in 2012, at that time, the state of Arizona had a prison suicide rate that was twice the national average. And it was, you know, a red flag, because when you have that many suicides and that many deaths, it's an indication of, obviously, serious problem.
I think that's exactly right. When you see a statistic like that, there's twice as many suicides at this state as the national average, something's really wrong with the way they're doing things. It's not really, and what exactly wrong takes investigation, but that's, like you say, that is a real red flag when you see those kinds of statistics.
Well, is it tied to solitary confinement? I noticed that with I'm going to blank on her name, Arias, that when she was recently sentenced to life without parole, they made a great deal of the prison seemed to take a great deal of glee in the fact that she was going to be put in solitary confinement.
Oh yeah,
you know, 23 hours out of 24 hours of every day, you know, of every year for mm-hmm. the rest of her life.
Did they really? Are they putting her in solitary?
This is, to me, cruel and inhuman. It's against the Constitution.
They're really
not
doing
just you.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, I mean, the reason why we were having so many suicides is because people were not being, people who were mentally ill were not being adequately given the proper mental health treatment, because they eliminated all of the psychiatrists and the medical personnel. At one point there was, they had drastically let go of a lot of the physicians and the psychiatrists. And so then they're not getting treatment, and then they're violating prison rules. because they're mentally ill, and then they're being placed in the hole for 23 hours a day. And being there are countries that ban the practice of solitary confinement. There are states in the United States that ban the practice of solitary confinement for people who are mentally ill. It has been declared unconstitutional by the courts. When you put somebody who's mentally ill in a room in a windowless cell for 23 hours a day with no human contact, it will dramatically exacerbate.
They don't have to be mentally ill.
And they don't have to be mentally ill. So just imagine if you're mentally ill, you will end up, this is the 25, 30, I mean, most of the suicides were happening with people who were mentally ill. And if you're not, it increases your likelihood that you will end up having serious, serious mental health issues.
And county jails and municipal jails are the biggest, what would you call it? The biggest holders of the mentally ill. There
right.
are new mental institutions, and the percentages of people who have mental illness in the prisons is huge.
Yeah, it's usually around 25%.
And then you're cutting
30%.
The budget for the.
Right.
A lot of this is solvable with prophylactic measures of talking to people and working with them. Why? I guess it's ideology that Arizona has has extreme laws. I see cases, and I guess we should investigate some of them, where people are sentenced to extremely long time for dubious kind of crimes.
Right, and I think we do have to reevaluate those truth in sentencing laws, and I think because we cannot sustain them long term in this state, we just can't afford it. And I think there have been a lot of, including Sylvia Allen, for example, raised some serious questions during these budget hearings about why are we spending so much money on prisons and not enough on schools. She's raising, actually Kelly Ward said prisons, schools and prisons, but Sylvia Allen raising very good questions about the fiscal sustainability, whether or not, how can we afford to maintain these policies? And I think we've got to really reevaluate some of them and change them. Otherwise, it's just we're not going to have money.
There's hope nationally now because Justice Kennedy just spoke out
yes.
quite forcefully against solitary confinement and
yes.
and sentencing. And there's some conservatives and libertarians mm-hmm. in the Congress that are moving forward prison reform or sentencing reform issues
yes.
that liberals have long fought for, but now
yes.
even the conservatives are moving that direction.
We do need bipartisan support here in Arizona, and you're right. We have seen some major progress in at the federal level and at the state levels in Texas, North Carolina, Mississippi. There have been California efforts to decriminalize marijuana, but reclassify certain offenses so that they're not felonies that qualify for longer prison terms. But so people are spending less time behind bars. I mean, look, it's in our benefit for us to spend more money rather than throwing people behind bars, but to kind of invest in releasing folks and investing in post-conviction rehabilitation, helping them become sustainable, helping them find jobs. I mean, that's ultimately going to be in the best interest of public safety, which is why we have been getting a lot of support from Republicans across the country. And here in Arizona, I do think that it's an issue that we're hoping to tackle within the next couple of years so that we can really reduce those numbers and help save the state some money and maybe reinvest some of those funds in things like education and other, much-needed services.
Staying with the crime and punishment, what is your position on having the police have a camera mm-hmm. on them to record the incidents that occur? We've seen recently in Cottonwood where the recording from a police car, not on a police officer, helped sort of exonerate the police.
Mm-hmm.
These cameras seem to go either way. Then we had that terrible shooting in North Carolina where you see the guy running and the police officer then shoots him 8 times in the back and
yes.
then apparently drops a taser next to him so he can claim that he's armed. And you have a report and you have his partner supporting the false report until the film comes out.
Yes, well, the ACLU very much supports the use of body cams, and we agree, Steve, that it's a win-win situation both for people and the police officers. There have been studies out there that show that there is a reduction in excessive use of force incidents, and it puts everyone on their best behavior. I mean, there are some concerns, some privacy concerns, some First Amendment concerns that I think we can overcome by making sure we have good policies in place. You know, we don't want, for example, the officers to see the footage before they write their arrest reports. We want to make sure that if it's a consensual encounter, that individuals have a right to say, please turn off that camera if you're in my house and I've called you for something that's not, you know, law enforcement related, domestic violence victims. I mean, they're all things. We need to make sure that they are not being videotaped, for example, when they're providing or being interviewed by police. So I think there are some concerns, but I think that they could be addressed, and those concerns far outweigh the benefits of these cameras, because we do think that this is going to be the next sort of important policy change that is going to be necessary to reduce these incidents.
So has there been any legislation introduced in Arizona on body cams?
There was a bill that was passed and signed into law about creating a study commission for the use of body cams, and so I think that's really good progress where they're going to be pulling together. It was introduced and passed by Senator Kavanaugh, and to create a study commission where they're going to have law enforcement representatives, they're going to have civil liberties groups, attorneys, all of the different stakeholder groups that are going to have a seat at the table to come up with some good policies. And so that's a step in the right direction. But again, here's another area where municipalities have been far ahead of the curve. There are a lot of municipalities here in Arizona that have been using body cams successfully and are happy with them for the past several years.
I think our police chief here in Sedona supports the use of body cams. I think that's in the works now.
Speaking of law enforcement abuse, you have a case going through right now in Arizona with my favorite character, Joe Arpaio.
Yeah.
That is a success of ACLU, if I'm not mistaken. You want to talk about that?
Yes, that is after a huge, huge victory against the sheriff. After 8 years of litigation, we filed the lawsuit in 2008. Last year we got a decision from a federal judge that said he was blatantly discriminating against Latinos and immigrants and violating their constitutional rights, and ordering an extensive series of court-mandated reforms, everything from body cams to policies, early intervention systems. I mean, it's a major overhaul of that department. And so here we are, the court ruled. We have a decision, and Arpaio has just blatantly ignored it. And he has very much gotten on the wrong side of that judge. And it's a very conservative Republican stand-up judge who has said, you know, you're deliberately ignoring my ruling, and we're taking him to trial next week. It's a contempt trial where we're pursuing both civil and criminal sanctions. The judge has recognized that, he says, I don't want taxpayers to be on the hook for Arpaio's bad behavior and for his deliberately ignoring my ruling. And so he's considering, and we've asked for sanctions that Arpaio has to pay for out of his own pocket, and restitution for the victims. Because Arpaio, there was an order saying you can't continue to round up immigrants in crime suppression sweeps just because of their immigration status. And then he went ahead and there were several raids after that. And so, you know what he did this week? I just have to say this really quickly. This is Arpaio, classic Arpaio, trying to distract the media. He announces today that, he's going to turn his jails into vegetarian jails, and that he himself is going to go vegetarian because he wants to lose weight. So here we have a sheriff who's going to be put on trial next week for ignoring the rule of law and trying to distract members of the public from what is really an effort to hold him accountable to, upholding the law, which is what he was elected to do. And he's talking about his own vain weight on the in front of reporters.
I try to be a vegetarian, and he's got a lot of publicity with Pamela Anderson from PETA,
yes,
coming to Tent City to share a vegetarian meal,
yeah,
in the prison. But as a vegetarian, or a wannabe anyway, that is not a vegetarian meal that I would look forward to.
Well, I don't think I don't think that's the idea.
But look, I mean, I use that as an example because it's no coincidence. I mean, he does this all the time. I mean, he has been for the past 2 weeks trying to get out of this contempt trial.
Right.
He's asked the judge, he's asked us to, and now this is his way of,
It makes me wonder if there's not something that may come out during the contempt trial that he is trying to avoid.
Alexandra, tell us how to contact the ACLU.
Well, our website is acluaz.org, and it's 602-650-1854 is our office number.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.